Hello, and welcome to the Zeitgeist 19 podcast, curating the spirit of now through the lens of art and sustainability. Your hosts are Farah Piriya-Cohen and Elizabeth Zhivkova.
On this Earth Day, we are delighted to release our conversation with leading marine scientists and climate expert Dr. Deborah Brosnan. Dr. Brosnan shares with us more about regenerating marine ecosystems such as coral reefs and mangroves, the importance of small island nations, and her view on the role of collaborations for a thriving blue economy. As well, Dr. Brosnan explains more about the nature-based solutions, referring to them as the original technology, and about their meaningful mission at OceanShot. This episode invites us to explore our intricate connection to the ocean. Our co-host today is Jan Pachner, a Secretary General of One Ocean Foundation. Welcome, Deborah. It is an honor to have you here with us. And to our audience, Happy Earth Day.
It's my pleasure to join you and Jan, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much to both of you. Deborah, it's a great honor to have you here. And we had the pleasure to get to know each other in New York. It was a bit hectic during Climate Week, but nevertheless, it was a great occasion. And so I'm honored to have you here with us and to talk a bit more and take a bit more time to deep dive a little bit in your activities. And so I think you are very well known, at least for me in the ocean sector and on things you do. But I think since we want to reach a broader audience, I would like people to know about a bit more about you. The area where you have been active in years was to sort of to take the part of the small island states and mm-hmm. their basically if they are way more affected maybe than some other countries and they don't have necessarily the financial means that we have in the industrial world. So basically they are feeling the effect earlier than anybody else and also unfortunately, they don't have the needs. But talking about nature-based solutions, I think this was one of the key topics that is out there now. Maybe you want to give us a bit of a headshot on what you're working on right now, and your approach also with OceanShot on these hot topics.
Yeah, absolutely. Be delighted to. So let me start, as you were saying. So my background, I grew up in the west of Ireland, and I spent a lot of my childhood in the ocean, and I credit the ocean for keeping me out of trouble. But as importantly, of really allowing me to see the value of nature and how important it is to our exploration, to our learning. It's why I'm a scientist. But also being able to see the deep connection we have to the sea, whether it's fishing communities, whether it's hunter-gatherers in the ocean. There were a lot of women where I grew up who used to collect snails, periwinkles from the ocean and sell them, just literally sell them on the street. So everybody was completely connected to the sea, and that encouraged me and it led me to become a marine biologist. In fact, it was my dream from when I was 10 years old to be a marine biologist, even though the term marine biologist had not been invented, at least in Ireland. So my love of the sea started a very long time ago, but as part of that, it's how do we interact with the sea? And so my career really, which has been, I always joke that I took the scenic route in my career, which is I've done a lot of different things in a lot of different parts of the world, but they're all united by one thing, which is ocean related, science related, and exploring our connection to the ocean. And that's my background in a nutshell. What I'm working on now, Ireland itself is a small island state, in essence. But if we look at small island states, they're also large ocean states, on average about 40 times larger if you take in their exclusive economic zone. So these islands are really huge in terms of what they contribute to the world. You're right that they tend to have a small voice. And you talk about COP29. I think that was a real example of how small their voice has been, even though everybody is saying they contribute less than 1% of greenhouse gases, they're vital to the economy, and they're suffering disproportionately. And that's the small voice is not the good news. That's not, you know, it's the bad news in this essence. But the good news is that these island nations are actually very powerful in what they can do. They can act faster than a lot of large nations. They can make a difference. And those differences, those actions that are taken can be scalable, can be scaled up. And in a way, the small island nations are like the ultimate best startup you could ever imagine. They've got everything and they can take that and scale it. And so rather than us looking down on them, we should be looking at them as the startup, the unicorn you want to invest in. So investors out there, start looking at small island nations. This is where you should be putting your money. So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and come to OceanShot, which is very dear to my heart. So let me tell you where it originated. So it's coral reefs are vital to our world. And anybody who snorkeled or dived or surfed on a reef understands just how extraordinarily beautiful they are, how vibrant they are, and how important they are. They break about 95 to 97% of a wave's energy. That in turn basically reduces the amount of storm surge that we have. It protects our properties. They generate sand and they keep that sand on the beach. And all of those ecosystem services are ones we take for granted. You know, I don't know many people who go down on a tropical beach and say, oh, look, I'm sitting on parrotfish frass that was generated by that reef in order for me to sit and have a beautiful pina colada. But actually, that's exactly what happens. You owe that great day that you remember to the coral reef and to the fish on that reef. Unfortunately, our coral reefs are in trouble. And they're in trouble they've been in trouble for a while. We've lost about a third of them. And they're in trouble for various reasons. We've had disease, but more recently it's rising temperatures. And we're seeing coral bleaching and coral mortality. Now, when a coral dies, the integrity that it has collapses. So the reef, that big reef structure that we're familiar with that these corals make, collapses. It's not as firm, and it collapses, and then the waves come in and add to sea level rise with that. So you have a perfect storm. But we can do something about that, and that's where the exciting part comes in. And OceanShot is designed to look at that ecosystem function that I just talked about. How do coral reefs, the reef structures, protect our coastlines? How do they generate the habitat for 25% of all marine biodiversity? It's the structure. So OceanShot is doing two things. One, it is looking at and exploring the structure of reefs and modeling and using science and then rebuilding and building those reef structures, so that we can deploy them in areas where the reefs are gone, or looking forward, put them in areas where those reef structures will help to create resilience for low-lying areas, areas that are vulnerable to sea level rise and storms. So that rather than the traditional idea, which was to build a seawall and removes all the sand, we're now rebuilding the ecosystem and putting it out there for that range of functions. And that's one of the first things. So I'm delighted two things that are happening with that. We deployed our first set of reefs about a year and a half ago, and they're working, which is fantastic. We're delighted. But what surprised us, and it shouldn't have surprised us, was the amount of biodiversity that came quickly onto those reefs. We had 35 different species of fish move onto our reef modules. So these are fish that wouldn't have a habitat elsewhere. And some of those fish are commercial species. So you know that it's adding to the fisheries, which are very important for reefs. And we had invertebrates. We had lobsters, octopus, all move in and find little homes on those reefs, which was very exciting to see. And that told us that this is a viable option. It's a way that we can look at creating resilience in small island nations that is scalable and transferable. So we've got two or three other projects that are currently in the works in both building and deploying these reefs. Now, the next exciting news is that we thought, if we can do this, we should be doing this on the island. We should be investing in these island communities, and we should be growing this idea and this concept in the reefs. So my partner in this is a man called John Paul DeGioia, who is a environmental philanthropist, businessman, well known in the States and internationally. And he and I have been talking about how do we create the opportunity to bring others into this, create the partnerships, get this going, and relate it to the business world as well. So we are building now, we have signed an agreement with the government of Antigua and Barbuda, Gaston Brown, the Prime Minister, to build an Ocean Innovation Lab on Antigua and Barbuda. That will start, building for that will start at the beginning of 2025. The focus is on this ocean shot idea of creating this restructure and on exploring innovative technologies that can help us to speed up the restoration, or AI technologies that can help us identify and quantify biodiversity, but also to create a platform for new technologies that are emerging and where the entrepreneurs may not have a platform in which to test those technologies. And the island nations are perfect for this kind of entrepreneurship. And this, you know, they certainly have been resilient. They know about resilience, and what a great place to put all of this together and bring in entrepreneurs and science, connect them with the local community, and start to build these new synergies that then can spread out. So that's my, I'm very excited about that. In fact, I will be down with John Paul in Antigua and Barbuda next week as we're advancing this idea. So we're really excited about this.
Congratulations. I think it sounds super exciting. Also, I think, you know, the Caribbean, I think the Caribbean states are quite interconnected. And I think this is, you know, solutions like this, when you have these success stories, I think they're very easily, you could replicate them in they are curious on what one is doing there. If it works for my place, it might, you know, different ways it could work easily the same way. So I think on these kind of solutions is it working on the expanding that on obviously you need, you know, we all need desperately financing in the ocean space. So I think your call before is I can only underline that. I mean, SDG 14 is completely underinvested so far, and I think we have to close also that gap of trying to get the ocean really into these climate discussions, and that's one thing that I'm still missing. Because as you say, I mean, you know, we can't talk about global warming without considering the ocean, right? It's also interconnected, and it's just foolish to think about land-based solutions and, I mean, only land-based solutions when you have the ocean that is absorbing 40% of the CO2 so far that has been produced in excess. And there's the big potential, and our basically the biggest ally we have is the ocean and all the ecosystems that are living in the ocean. So I think this really needs to get across. And you know, I think to connect a bit with what you said before on the small island states, maybe... you know, once this whole topic of blue carbon gets a bit more into the also from a scientific perspective, maybe has a bit more clarity, this could open up probably huge opportunities also for small island states, also on the financial perspective. What do you think?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right on both points. One is that we have to get the oceans front and center in climate change, because exactly as you said, they're absorbing excess carbon dioxide. They've absorbed 90% of the excess heat. They create half of our oxygen. If they were a country, they'd rank seventh in the world in terms of GDP. And yet here we are still saying we must put them front and center. And so we need to defend it. If I said to you, I have something that will absorb, you know, 90% of the excess heat, provide you with a GDP, support 3.5 billion people daily, and it's all for free. Would you be interested? Absolutely. So we need to have people understand better that this is an extraordinary resource, that we have been taking advantage of it in a good way. It has been providing us with benefits for free, and now it needs our investment in order to sustain those benefits, to help us through the transition of climate change and to support us. So I'm 100% with you. We've got to get that message out more and more. And it's a positive message. It's not one of doom and gloom. It's like, look, we have this extraordinary ally. We're not in this on our own. We have so much help from the ocean. Your second point on investment, I think if people fully understood the value and the opportunities, the investments would be higher. And we do have to bridge that gap. When we're talking about Ocean Shot, you know, and we called it Ocean Shot because we thought we need to go out there and do something, do it in small island nations, but have it be big. And that's, you know, address the scale of the issue. But when we're looking at the investments, we've got to get more investment in there. With Ocean Shot, we're looking at the value to the private sector. So there is huge conservation value. But if conservation alone and we relied on people to care about the ocean, we would have solved the problem long ago. The point is that people still need to make a living. They still need to have homes. They still need to, you know, to basically thrive. And if we can tie the value of the ocean sustainably to people being able to make a living, have a good quality of life, support their kids, then that really creates a much greater bond with the ocean. And so when we were looking at Ocean Shot and its benefit, you know, who benefits from this? The coastal communities benefit. The investors who are developing along the coast benefit. So this is an opportunity for them to invest and get that return on investment. And for us, we are focusing on also the value, the return on investment by investing in resilience. This is not a nice to have. This is an absolutely must have. And that can be quantified financially. So the more we can do to bring together the communities of conservation, return on investment and communities, that the stronger we will be. And we're not, again, we can't continue to pit people against each other. We've got to bring people together and create that unified community, and we can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like your positive message and your positive note and tone of voice to it, because you know, it is obviously, we're talking about huge issues, and it needs systematic approach. And I think you know, the local communities, obviously it takes some time probably to get them on the table and talk with them, but I mean they know, I mean they see what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they can, if you can show them that there is a positive impact for them in first place. It's not somebody mm-hmm. coming in trying to, you know, show them something, flying out again. I mean, right? Probably.
Absolutely.
Probably mm-hmm. there's also, it's also a great playground for innovations. I'm talking about materials. I'm not sure what materials you're using mm-hmm. for these coral reef structures, but probably it's something that is materials that are like with nutrients.
I totally agree with you. And this is what I love, is that, you know, I work in a lot of, and have worked in a lot of emerging nations, small island developing states. And what I see is actually something I experienced as well when I was growing up, is you have a lot of people that are very smart. They have great ideas and no opportunities. And they don't have, they don't meet the people that allow them to see that what they're thinking and what they're innovating actually makes a difference and can be used and scaled. So the opportunity to build a relationship so that there's a lot of super bright people on islands that often have to go away and take other careers. If you can provide the opportunities there for them to see what's available and that they can do it in their home countries, to me, that's really exciting. And your second point about young people. Oh, I was at Web Summit, 75,000 people, most of them young, all doing the most amazing things. And what I loved about being there was, it's not about the talking, it's about the doing. And the kind of innovations that are coming in technology and materials, you name it, there is a group of people working on it. And if we can harness that energy and that excitement and that innovation and start to put it towards the ocean, it's amazing. You know, now that I think the younger generation are not even questioning, should sustainability be an issue? Should we be addressing these issues? They're assuming that they need to do it, and they're doing it. And we're the ones that need to catch up. They're leaving us in the dust, which is how it should be. But I feel very hopeful about that. And I think we just have to continue to provide the support and amplify their voices where we can.
Absolutely. And I hope that with this podcast, we can get that message across also to that younger generation. And it's a bit, it doesn't come from me. I'm not sure who said it, but it makes the point where we say, you know, our generation, we can't really say that we didn't know. Right.
No.
What's happening. And, yeah. and probably we are the last generation that can really do something about it. With obviously the drive from the younger generation mm-hmm. coming in and them taking care.
Yeah.
But we don't really have a lot of time to get our act together. So I think the sense of urgency is clear, but I also like the positive message that comes through from you also on these solutions. And we're talking about nature-based solutions, so not anything you know. Well, we just have to change a bit of the value system, how we look at nature, and we mm-hmm. are part of nature. And if I can sort of summarize a bit, it's as you said, we have to find our place in nature and just respect all these services that nature does free of charge for all of us, mm-hmm. like for all of humanity, continuously and recognize it and protect it. And restore, as you said, mm-hmm. you know, as you're doing with OceanShot, I think with the corals, there's other projects out there, I think, that are very promising mm-hmm. on seaweed and kelp and all kind of nature-based solutions. And I think it's just an exciting space to work with. And I'm expecting a lot of innovations and solutions coming out, as long as we don't go into crazy ideas like ocean mining and things like this, you know, just watching out, we don't have the same mistakes that we do from the land and try to transfer them into the water. That look at fishing, for example. No, I mean, just taking and taking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a really good point about we have an opportunity here to create our own awareness of our relationship with nature in ways that perhaps we haven't done a very good job at, as you said, when we're looking at the land. We've mostly seen it as a way to exploit, but it is the ecosystems themselves and the ocean, how intact they are, that provide the services to us. And creating an awareness of that relationship and leveraging that relationship rather than trying to come in and take and dominate it and exploit it to the point that we lose that ecosystem integrity. I totally agree with you, but we do have that opportunity. And I think, oddly enough, because the ocean can sometimes be more difficult to work with, if you don't align with it, anything that can possibly go wrong will. But if you do align with it, it creates a very beautiful, harmonious way of working together for the ocean, for ourselves. So we have an opportunity.
Thank you, Deborah. Speaking of protection and preservation of nature and positive impacts, you recently influenced several policy changes in Antigua and Barbuda, such as banning sand mining and parrotfish fishing. Can you tell us more about that and their ecological impacts?
Yes, so with the sand mining and parrotfish fishing, so this was, and I have to give credit to the government of Antigua and Barbuda and Prime Minister Gaston Browne in particular for being on top of this. Sand mining has been, particularly in Barbuda, but also in Antigua, and you see it in a lot of islands where it's sand is mined in Barbuda industrially. Often it's more at a kind of construction scale on some of these islands. When you mine sand off the beaches or when you mine the dunes, you take away the resilience layer, you take away that natural barrier to storm surge, you take away sea turtle nesting habitat, and you remove native vegetation that is adapted to these areas. And we've seen a lot of that in the Caribbean. We've seen a lot of it in Barbuda over the years, not for any other reason than people have had to have an economic basis for their economy, and that's often what it's been. So the government of Antigua and Barbuda banned the export of sand mining as basically as the first step, because most of the sand that's mined was being exported internationally, so that very little even was going back to the community itself. That's the first. The second is with parrotfish. So parrotfish are essential to coral reefs. They do two things. They clean the reef structure so that corals can settle, even though they actually nibble on corals, including dead corals. And then when they poop out sand. So they maintain the reef, and then they literally create the beach at the same time. And so most of the tropical sands are created by parrotfish poop. Parrotfish have been overfished in many areas around the world, but particularly in the Caribbean, leading to an increase in seaweed and a reduction in sand production. So the government of Antigua and Barbuda enhanced the ban on sand on parrotfish fishing in order to allow these parrotfish to recover. And one of the opportunities here is that sometimes when fishermen hear, oh, there's a ban on parrotfish fishing, there's a ban on this, it seems very negative and very top-down regulation. But if you can tie that to explaining, we're banning parrotfish in these areas for this amount of time until we give them a chance to recover. And when they do recover, and this is where marine protected areas come in, if they can recover in protected areas, then you get what's called a spillover. And then those parrotfish do go into other areas where they can return to the fishery. So really what you're doing is creating time for a rebalance of the ecosystem and for fishermen to be able to then recover some of their fisheries and hopefully do it more sustainable with good regulation. So I will say thank you. Yes, we've been talking with the government on many of these issues for a few years, and I will credit them for stepping in, because for governments, it's not always easy to make these kind of decisions.
Thank you, Dr. Brosnan. It is truly wonderful that you succeeded in influencing the government to make these necessary decisions and positive changes. It is absolutely beautiful when we see examples of collaboration between environmentalism and policymaking. We humbly admire your practice in conservation, and to build on what you previously mentioned and to wrap up this conversation, in a video of yours for ReTV, you mentioned that nature-based solutions were the original technology. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, so we think about technologies, we're looking at the application of science. Often we're looking at these application results for human benefits. And nature-based solutions are the original technology, because we have used that. We have used nature as our solution to fisheries, for coastal resilience, for economic benefit, almost without even touching nature. So our original support, the original technology, was nature itself. The evolution of nature has given us this amazing technology. And it's been doing it quietly, and we've continued to benefit from it. So when I talk about nature-based solutions and nature being the original technology, I'm saying nature invented technology before we did. We have benefited from the technology, and now we can work together with nature to enhance that technology, to give something back to nature, as well as continuing to help our own communities thrive. We are interested in connecting with investors who are interested in investing in this kind of program, but also in entrepreneurs who may have technologies that are related to reefs, seagrass, coastal mangrove systems, and dunes in particular. They're the habitats we have, but particularly the ocean space, and seeing what we can do together and how we can support it.
Do you see, from the support that you're getting so far, I mean, okay, beautiful to have sort of the, you know, government support on these solutions, especially when you talk about protecting areas, etc. But when we actually need to implement these solutions, and also obviously scaling up is a huge issue, right? Do you see that there is a growing interest from the private sector? Because clearly public sector, we can't count on the money coming from the public sector. So do you see that there is an increase on the private sector on this regard when you talk about your solutions that you're working on?
Yes, I do. And And just speaking frankly, I see an increase in interest in the private sector when the private sector sees it as being in their interests. So when you approach the private sector and say, we should really do this, they look at what is their disposable income to help conservation. And when times are tough, then that disposable income goes down and the investment goes down, which is that cycle of conservation. If a private investor sees a different story, which is by investing in this, I am creating, I'm de-risking my investment. I'm de-risking my development. And therefore, I've been cutting down on my costs now, but certainly the losses in the future. It now begins to speak their language and they see a need for doing it. And that is often how they engage. And once they begin to see that, what I've seen is the mindset changes to be also more concerned about conservation and recognizing the value of conservation. So it is, it's almost like a way in the door to a larger issue, but I am seeing a greater interest in the private sector. So that interest is expanding as we move forward. We still have a ways to go because for many, they still think of nature as almost a risky and the oceans as risky. And it's beginning to explain that those risks are not as they were and the technology can help to reduce those risks. But it's moving in the right direction.
I think so. I fully agree with you. And I think also talking about the financing side, the de-risking is obviously a huge part. And sort of investing in nature actually has your positive returns. I think that's the big message that should come out. Sometimes on there was a financial investing on impact investors. There was an event in Verbier last year, and the slogan came out basically: investing in nature is a new real estate, because it's about long-term investments. And basically you have the guarantee, like, not, you know, if you don't invest in nature, basically you're exposing yourself to risk, right? But in a way, there is parallels with real estate, because real estate usually is a long-term investment. It's not like a short-term investment, right? I mean, if you look at very brief return, probably nature is not going to give you that. I mean, you need to stick in there for a long run. And you will see your return because you're simply protecting nature. And we try to sort of enter a different subject now, giving value to nature. That's another hot topic.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But you're absolutely right. That's a really interesting, quote or saying, because it is true. And in a way, what are reefs? They're real estate. And when we think about, like, building our reefs and restoring our reefs, we're creating real estate for marine organisms to move in and live in and inhabit. And real estate actually is one of the amenities or commodities that's in short supply in the ocean. You know, there isn't enough reef for the larvae to settle on. So the very interesting juxtaposition. I'll have to think some more on that. But yes, you know, just to encourage people to connect with us if they're interested in getting involved, as we said. And I think that's it. And even just sharing their experiences, because there are people like fishermen, there are people like divers, or people like surfers who are eyes and ears on the ocean. And they do what I think of as the first step in science. They observe every day and they see the patterns, and we're always interested in what patterns are being seen.
And being a surfer myself, it's passionate about the ocean. I think this is, you know, the first thing you want is to protect the environment. Right.
Yeah. Well, just, the reefs are very important to the reefs are very important to your surf breaks.
just enjoying nature, right? If nature is if the water quality and everything else goes down, it's not much fun. So, just appreciating basically all these services that nature does to us and gives to us free of charge, and we need to protect it and be the guardians also for future generations. So
and value exactly what you said, value that the ocean is actually where we go home. We do go home to the sea, and that the, if you like, the emotional, the spiritual, the cultural value that we get from it should never be underestimated.
Thank you so much, Deborah, for finishing on a positive note and for this insightful and inspiring conversation.
My pleasure speaking with both of you. Thank you so much for inviting me to join your conversation.
Thanks very much. Beautiful.